During our politically correct times, it has become fashionable to find fault with Western civilization. But if there were no Western civilization, what would the world be like? Would it be a better place or far worse? Let's take a look. This is Beyond the Cover with your host, Gary Benoit, and today we have with us Selwyn Duke, who is a regular writer for the New American Magazine. Selwyn, welcome once again to the program.
Gary, it's great to be with you again.
Well, it's always great to have you, and of course, we have you on this occasion because of a cover story that you wrote for the March 13 issue of the New American Magazine entitled World Without the West. And you started your cover story in a very, very novel way. In fact, it made me think of a Hollywood movie, It's a Wonderful Life. Could that have been an inspiration for how you started, Selwyn? And perhaps you could describe, too, how you did start your article.
Yeah. Well, that was an inspiration, actually. And I started out with a little fictional story. And you have to understand what's going on there, Gary. I don't really think I'd ever done that before, but I've so long been a member of the alternative media that I just wanted to find out what it was like to be a member of the mainstream media and write fiction.
But of course, there is a stark difference, and that you identified it as fiction. I mean, it was obvious that it was a fictional story to illustrate a point. Of course, the media parades its fiction as fact.
Yeah. This was a fictional story involving a young woke man named Jason, and I thought it was a good way to introduce things because this fellow really is an archetype for so many young people you find today. But anyway, that's how I started out. And then I used that in order to illustrate where we would be if the West had never existed. And I'm not going to go through the whole story, but basically he's a young man who wishes the West didn't exist, thinks it needs to be wiped away. He's been indoctrinated in college. And then what happens is he's shown what the world would be like if the West never existed. And it's not really a nice place. And he learns a lesson through it. But basically in my article, Gary, what I do is I look at the main arguments used against Western civilization. And I would say four of the big ones right now, you can add to this if you think I've missed something, are there's slavery. We engaged in slavery. There's colonization. There's the violation of human rights. And then you have climate change, a more recent one where that's also blamed on the West. And I think maybe we should go through these things sequentially. Of course, always chime in if I'm going on too long, as I always say. But slavery, first of all, well, that's an easy one to knock out of the ballpark. The reality of the matter is that slavery has been with us since time immemorial. It's one of the world's oldest institutions, and we don't need to be focusing on it in schools. I talked about this earlier today with Rebecca Terrell. All we need to really tell kids is the truth, which is that the West might not have been the first entity that practiced slavery, but guess what? It certainly was the first entity that eliminated it. And that's a striking fact of history. In fact, that started at least as early as 1777, Gary. In Vermont, a year after we declared our independence, they actually enacted some laws to partially eliminate slavery. So it's something that started very, very early on. And we can hang our hats on that. Why are we impugning the West talking about slavery when the West was the very entity that eliminated it, and when today it still occurs? It's still found in places such as Africa and maybe a few other places as well. So I think that's all you have to say about slavery. Now you have colonization, which is very interesting as well, Gary. We know that the West colonized third world lands. European powers did this especially. But what you have to remember here is, first of all, many, many countries, including the European ones, were colonies at one time. Britain, for instance, was a colony of the Romans. And if you go back to those times, I'm sure people there had very much the same complaints that third worlders might have had in the 19th century. They might have said, oh, well, these people have come here. They're trampling our culture. They're imposing their ways upon us. But at the end of the day, what really was the effect of colonization? Was there a silver lining to this cloud? And there certainly was. So let's go through this sequentially. First of all, we have this idea that the West got rich by exploiting third world nations. First of all, that's absolutely untrue. In general, as Thomas Sowell pointed out in one of his books, The Economics Professor, and if anyone cares, he is a black American, he pointed out that like any kind of conquest, Gary, colonization was really very, very expensive. It tended to cost the West money. In fact, because of this, people who were in charge of the budgets in these Western countries often were opposed to colonization. One example, in the run-up to World War I, Germany's expenditures relating to its African colonies were greater than the revenues that it derived from those African colonies. And that was the case just about across the board, with a couple of exceptions. The Congo, South Africa would be exceptions because they had so much mineral wealth. But no, the West did not get rich off colonization. That's a complete lie. And in fact, that's one reason why colonization ended around the middle of the 20th century, because it was just too expensive to sustain and the Western countries' budgets were really hurting at that point. Now, what effect, though, did colonization have on third world nations? Well, if you go back to Roman times, we know that actually Europe was the better for the Romans having done what they did. They spread Christianity, they built infrastructure, they spread Roman culture, which was superior. And you can see the same thing in the 19th century, and I guess to an extent the 18th century, with respect to the third world colonies. As Thomas Sowell also pointed out, when you have a situation where a superior culture, technologically, culturally, colonizes a culture that's not as advanced in those respects, the less advanced cultures always benefit.
Someone, if I could just interject, there are people who would claim that all cultures are alike, in the sense that they're all equal. That it would be wrong to say that one culture is superior to another culture, because if you say one is superior, that means another is inferior. But that is really crazy logic, isn't it? Because how about when Christopher Columbus went to the New World, or the ones who followed Columbus? Didn't they practice human sacrifice? And would anyone claim today that human sacrifice would be a superior or an equal culture to Western civilization?
Yeah, well, of course, what they're doing is they're waxing relativistic. That's what you're talking about. And it makes no sense. That's a juvenile philosophy, because if you're going to say that all cultures are morally equal, it's like saying that all ideologies, liberalism, conservatism, Nazism, Marxism, are morally equal. That can't be true unless everything is relative, because different cultures, just like different ideologies, espouse different values. Therefore, they can't all be morally equal unless all values are. And if you say that, that's the mistake of moral relativism. But there's no question about it, Gary. If you look at these third world civilizations, when the West arrived on their shores, these were cultures that by and large were in the Stone Age. They usually didn't have written languages. As you indicated, human sacrifice and cannibalism and slavery were rife. They were status quo. And by the way, I'm not painting the West with a brush that indicates that it's deific. No, these things also occurred in the West a very, very long time ago in pre-Christian times. And again, eventually they were ended. But the point is, the West went to these lands, ended these things, and also understand, if you talk about freedom, that peoples in these third world cultures didn't have freedom in the way we conceptualize it. They did not vote. They didn't have representative government. They were living under kings or chieftains, and they have representative government because of the West. So again, no one is saying that it's right to colonize others. What we're saying is that every cloud has a silver lining. And if you're going to analyze history, you have to do it rationally and logically and say, okay, what was the effect really? And if you look at it, you'll see the effect that the West had upon the world was on balance unbelievably positive. No comparison.
Right. Now, you mentioned four things at the beginning of your presentation, and two of them you just covered, slavery and colonization. But how about the other two?
Yeah. Well, now you have the violation of human rights. That's pretty easy to knock out of the ballpark as well, because you have to realize that our whole modern concept of human rights was originated in the West in the first place. Mm-hmm. The cultures we're talking about, the third world cultures, and that term third world didn't actually exist back when the colonization started, but we're using that term. They didn't have this concept of human rights. So the ironic thing here is that if you're going to criticize the West for this, you have to do it within the context of the worldview that the West itself birthed. As I've said before, it's sort of like taking a guy who originated perfect golf technique and then criticizing him because he can't exhibit it perfectly. That's not rational, because if an ideal really is ideal, as in perfect, there's no way anyone could possibly live up to it. So now let's get on to climate change. That's the last thing. That's a very recent one. We're told, well, there have to be climate reparations because, after all, the West has been spewing all this CO2 in the atmosphere and it's been ruining the climate, and that's affecting third world nations. And exhibit A, Gary, might be things such as the floods they recently had in Pakistan. Well, the thing is, that doesn't hold water. Now, Pakistan, of course, is pushing for these reparations because it wants a handout. It wants to be a welfare state. But if you look at Pakistan, I think I have these figures correct. When it achieved its independence in 1947, I believe about a third of the country was forested. Now, only 1/20th of the country is forested. And that's why it's having these floods, because there's more rain runoff off the mountains. It leads to lots of problems. Now, this is a significant issue because if you look at the West, what has it really done environmentally? Well, the truth is, Gary, the West has the cleanest environments in the world. It is always the most prosperous, freest countries that have the best environments. I mean, we've talked in the past, I think, about the Soviet Union, how it ravaged the environment, what China is doing today. But why does the West have the cleanest environments? Well, it's for two reasons. There are two prerequisites for that. One is prosperity, and one is freedom, Gary, in the sense of being able to choose your own leaders. Why? Well, freedom is important because when you can't hold your leaders accountable, inevitably what happens is they rape the environment in the name of some cause that's near and dear to their hearts. We saw that with Saddam Hussein when he poisoned and he drained the Iraqi swamps. We saw that with Joseph Stalin in the Soviet Union. He drained the Aral Sea till it was down to 10 to 15% of its original size. And like I said, China today, there's a whole area in China where all the bees have died off, the last I heard. And consequently, the farmers, I think they have pear trees, actually have to pollinate their trees by hand, which is very labor intensive because the bees are no longer around to do it. So you have to be able to hold your leaders accountable. Otherwise, you're not going to have a clean environment. In a place that's a despotic regime like China, there's no one you can sue if the environment is damaged. There are no activist organizations that can make a stink because its actors will just be thrown in jail, or their actors, I should say, will be thrown in jail. The second thing you need is prosperity to have a clean environment. Why? Well, there's an old Chinese proverb, Gary, that is relevant here, and it goes, when there's food on the table, there are many problems. When there's no food on the table, there's only one problem. The fact of the matter is that when people are struggling to survive, suffering privation, they're not going to worry about killing off the last white rhino or clear-cutting the rainforest because they're just struggling to survive. Whether we like it or not, environmentalism is a luxury of people who have comfort. And by the way, I very much care about the environment. I want to make that clear. We've discussed this in the past. I'm a conservationist. But we have to realize that if you care about the environment, you're going to make sure we have free markets. You're going to make sure that Western culture and the Western concept of human rights prevails. Because if that does not happen, if you develop an autocratic regime, you are never going to have a clean environment. And just to sum up here, so what I'm saying is that so-called climate change has nothing to do with the West. The West is not the problem with respect to the environment. The model it sets is actually the solution. So contrary to what activists say, when they say, well, if the rest of the world becomes like us, we're doomed because it's not going to be sustainable. No, the truth is the rest of the world does have to become like us, prosperous and free. That's the only solution. So you just might say, as I concluded my essay with, the good advice here for the third world would be, go Western, young man. Embrace our norms.
Well, thank you very much, Selwyn. But before we wrap up, I would like to ask one question, because basically what you've done in this presentation is debunk the criticisms of the West. And of course, that's hugely important. And a lot of what you said, I'm sure, are things our viewers never have heard before. But how about the blessings of Western civilization? How about hospitals, for instance? Well, we have hospitals today, but I wonder if just for a final response or a final salvo, if you could just provide some examples of what the world has benefited from as a result of the existence of Western civilization.
Oh, well, there's no question about it. Now, don't get me wrong. The West has borrowed from other civilizations as well, our numbers system, for instance, and so many things. It's that all two heads are better than one principle. Great civilizations do not emerge in isolation. There's no question about it. But the fact is, if you look at the world, you mentioned hospitals. Well, there's the university system. And then there's most everything that we enjoy that makes our modern lives better, like refrigeration, flush toilets, you name it. The printing press, even though movable type was originated in China, it was made more feasible and more workable by Gutenberg, who was a Westerner. And you could just go on and on and on. Computers, airplanes, you name it. The whole modern world was largely created by the West. Like I've said before, it's the greatest civilization that has ever graced this planet. And we ought to thank God for it. And that's why it's so tragic, Gary, that when we look at polls, we see only 27% of young Americans are proud to be an American. Over in Europe, it's the same thing. There was a poll that found, I think, 40-some-odd percent of young Britons believe that other young Britons should be taught that the UK was founded on slavery and is still, no, founded on racism, I'm sorry, and is still systemically racist. I mean, unbelievable how these kids have been indoctrinated with something that's not just wrong, but that is the polar opposite of the truth. They're viewing the greatest civilization this world has ever seen as a pox upon this planet. It's an amazing coup for the left, but it does not bode well for our future unless we can change that, because you never, ever preserve things that you don't have an appreciation for.
And of course, providing an appreciation for the past and for the blessings of Western civilization is a cardinal purpose of the New American Magazine and its parent organization, the John Birch Society. So, Selwyn, thank you very much for writing such a valuable article. And in the description for this video, we will include a link where people can see your article. So, thank you and have a great day.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you. And God bless.
God bless you.
I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. I mean, whoa. Who knows what would come out of that?
It isn't the Constitution that's the problem. It is the people who ignore the Constitution.
What we need are just more people that would read the one we have.
It's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable.
Who understand the Constitution and are willing to take a stand when necessary.